Hello, my name is Leo Vardarella. I'm a writer and reporter with Becker's Hospital Review. Today, I'll be talking with Michael Dowling, the president and CEO of Northwell Health, and also a regular contributor to Becker's Hospital Review. We'll be discussing some of the most common leadership mistakes. Michael, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted. Thank you.
Now, Michael, can you tell us a little bit about your first point, which is leaders becoming too infatuated with themselves?
Yes, and I think it's important when we talk about these to reflect on some of the examples that we see today in the public domain as well as in the private domain where people actually do these things that they should not do. And the first one is people become very infatuated with themselves. They believe that they're the most important people. It's all about them. They're pretty self-absorbed. They believe that their ego is so exalted that they create their own sense of reality. And if something affects them personally, then it affects their ability to lead. Because trust, which is essential to leadership, is something that is dramatically diminished when people are completely self-absorbed and fascinated with their own situation and their own personal circumstance.
And do you think that this sort of divided reality, that goes to your next point, which is, you know, instead of unifying your teammates and the people that you work with, this infatuation with self actually kind of splits your team up?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, all organizations are made up of multiple entities. I mean, you have multiple constituencies in every organization. If you're in the healthcare organization, for example, as most people who will be listening to this probably are, you have doctors full-time and voluntary, you have nurses, you have union members and non-union members, you have research staff, etc. All of those have to be moving in the same direction if you're going to be consistent and if you want to have good performance. So if you can unify everybody around a common purpose and a common mission, then you're not going to have sustained performance. You know, it's like the greatest teams in every sport. The game is essentially won in the locker room where people say, we're going to defend one another. We're going to work together. We have a common enemy, which is those others that are competing with us. And if you can create a sense of unity, especially if you're totally self-absorbed and everything is about you personally, then you break down all feelings of trust among you and your team members. So to me, there's a direct relationship between this and the other one. And unity of purpose, unity of operations, unity of commitment, unity of passion is all very, very, very important.
And how do you think leaders can, in fact, build that unity?
Well, one of the things is to, first of all, is to choose the right people. Pick people who have a value set and a set of behaviors, especially in healthcare, that believe that the idea of community is important, that people working together is important, that teamwork is a very, very important value, that people are willing to speak their minds, they're willing to articulate their positions, but when decisions are made, they're all on the same page. You know, I, for example, don't like to tolerate people who are very, very, very smart, but who believe, however, that they're the smartest people in the world and who don't believe that they need to work with anybody else, especially not to work in harmony with anybody else. Those are the kinds of people that can be unbelievably dysfunctional in a healthcare system or in any organization and break completely that sense of unity. So having the right people in the right places is absolutely imperative if you're going to have a positively performing organization. The other thing is you want people that don't demonize other people on the team, who can have frank discussions, but don't behind the back of others say very negative things about them and who try to undermine other people's commitment to the organization. And that is often done by people who are too self-absorbed, who think that it's just they themselves that are the important group.
And what do you think are some of the obstacles that get in the way of leaders surrounding themselves with the right people?
And not understanding what the mission of the organization is, not understanding the concept of teamwork. You know, I'm a person who, you know, spent a lot of time in playing sports, and I use the analogy of sports a lot. You don't win a team sport if you have the wrong people that can't get along. And I think a lot of leaders don't spend enough time actually meeting with the people or understanding the people that you're hiring, understanding what exactly they really stand for. A common mistake, I believe, for example, is people look at the CV. They say, well, this person, you know, graduated, let's say, from Harvard. This guy has a great academic background. The guy has published, you know, many articles. The guy is good academically. That's only part of the story. What you need then to do is find out, what is that person really like? What really motivates that person? What is his family situation like? What has he done in the community? What is his personality like? What kind of attitude does the person possess? Attitude is important. And in an organization, especially in healthcare, you want people that have a very positive, patient-centered, community-focused, patient-first attitude, and who believe strongly, as I said earlier, in the concept of teamwork. So I, for example, in my organization, I meet with every new employee who is hired. I meet all new employees every single week, every Monday morning. This is not just what you do when you talk to the senior people in the organization. It's having that commitment that you look at all employees throughout the whole organization. So I think it's important to hire people who park the cars, the valet parkers, and hire those people who do that well, who have a passion for doing that, and who understand the role that they play in the organization, or the people who clean the rooms in the hospital, or the people who work in dietary. So I make a point every Monday to spend a couple of hours meeting with all new employees that we're hiring for that week.
Now, one point that you make that I think is really interesting is one of the biggest mistakes being to never apologize or admit wrongdoing. Now, why is that so important for leaders?
Well, I think you have to have a sense of humility. You're not somebody that is a know-all, that knows everything, and your opinion is always correct. If you carry that attitude, then people necessarily know that you are wrong. If you're not willing to apologize, admit mistakes, you're not going to be successful. Remember that success is built on the backs of failure. You're going to fail. You're going to trip up. You got to be willing to say, a good try, a good effort. We tried our best. It didn't work. I was wrong in pushing this, but I am educated enough, smart enough, intelligent enough, and good enough as a leader that I'm willing to acknowledge what I did wrong. We put it aside, we put it behind us, and then we move forward. That sense of humility and honesty builds trust, builds that sense of community, and it also means that you take accountability for the actions that you pursued, even if they're wrong. And that's what you need in all leadership in any organization, not just the CEO. You need that kind of those attributes in all your major leadership.
Now, that sounds pretty closely connected to another point of yours, which is blaming your predecessors, and also closely connected to lowering the bar on civility. Can you explain those a little more closely and also say how they all tie into each other?
You see this happening a lot today, but for example, in the political world. At the highest level of our politics today, you see this occurring. That everything that's wrong was caused by those people who came before. That's a cop-out. People do make mistakes. People start policies, programs with the best of intentions, the best of analysis, the best of data. Sometimes it doesn't work. So what you should be doing is acknowledge the great efforts that were made by people that came before you. Acknowledge the commitment that they had. Recognize where they may not have worked. But stay away from basically saying, I would be great if my predecessors had done everything so differently and so well. There is an ignorance attached to not acknowledging the accomplishments of people that came before, because if you're honest about it, you stand on the backs of those people that came before. You are where you are in many ways because of the good things that people before you did. Not that everything succeeded, just like not everything that you will do will be a success. And lowering the bar and civility is how you treat people. You don't demonize other people. You don't go around calling other people names. You have a positive aspect towards people. You respect people for what they do and what they're trying to do. It's obviously somebody is off the team completely. You have options that you can take. But have your discourse to be civil, professional, humane, humbling, and basic respect. You know, in many ways, treat people like the way you yourself would like to be treated. And again, today we see a dramatic lack of civility in a lot of our public discourse. And I think those of us in healthcare, I think, have an obligation to basically say, this is not what leaders should be doing.
And how do you think communication style plays into all that?
Well, I think communication. You know, the biggest danger with communication is believing it has occurred. I personally believe that, you know, we can often err on the side of using technology too much to communicate. You have to balance the use of technology with the human element in communication, talking to people directly, dealing with people face to face, repeating, you know, the issue that you want to communicate and doing it over and over again. You don't hide just behind technology and basically say, you know, I sent a text. Therefore, why didn't the guy understand what I meant by the text? Well, if you want people to fully understand what you mean, I believe that you've got to go beyond just sending a simple email or a text. And I think sometimes we become hostage to technology. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand the role of technology. I think it's important. I think we have to use it. But if we hide behind it, and then things don't go right because we fail to completely communicate in the way that people, I think, want to be communicated, which is talk to people. Go out of the way to talk. And when people say to me, well, there's not enough time in the day to communicate these things, my answer to that is, you're not making appropriate use of the time in the day. You have all the time there is. You shouldn't be communicating, you know, messages by tweeting. That means, like, I'm afraid to say what I should be saying publicly, so I'm going to tweet. And then you can't communicate complex issues in the 3 or 4 sentences like some people try currently to do today.
So how much time do you actually spend getting out on the floor of all your hospitals and trying to make this face-to-face communication happen?
I'm out in the facilities all the time. In fact, between now and May, I will be in every single facility in the organization meeting with at least 300 or 400 people each week. And that means communicating to the line staff, to the first line supervisors, to the middle managers, not just me speaking to them, but giving them the opportunity to ask me questions, giving them the freedom to ask things of me that they may not otherwise get the opportunity to ask, and then force me to clarify it. I spend a lot of time on this. I mean, as I said, I spend 2 to 2.5 hours every Monday morning with all new employees because they need to understand what the organization is about. You know, it's very, very standard in most organizations where people come in, they work in a unit of 10 or 20 people, they work in a division of the same size, let's say. They get to know that unit and that division very, very well, but they don't understand the relationship between that unit, that division, and the whole organization and how what they're doing in that division is connected to the overall whole. They're disconnected from the mission of the overall organization. They don't get to see the leadership of the whole organization. They don't get the overall mission and strategy explained. And that's what I do every Monday morning with all new employees. It's also important, by the way, here, and it goes back to some of the other questions that you asked, is that leadership is all about promoting a sense of optimism, accepting, understanding reality, not dwelling on all of that which is wrong, which is a lot of our leaders sometimes do, especially today our political leaders. Everything is all bad. Things are not working well. The country is going downhill type of argument. Similarly, in an organization, you want to promote the idea of optimism, positive culture. We have challenges, but more importantly, we have opportunities. However it is today, we can be better tomorrow. Tomorrow is something to look forward to. The difficulties can be overcome. And that message, I believe, has to be driven down through the whole organization so that everybody at every level can be able to say, look, I'm committed to this organization. I understand the strategy. I have a positive attitude. This is a culture of teamwork and and collaboration and hope. And if you can get those messages across, and you get those messages across by continuous communication, and it's not a project, it's not something you do 1 month and forget it for 11 months, it's something you do every month.
I think all those points just really do a great job of illuminating how important, you know, how organizational attitude really comes from the top down. I think you really showed that. Now, one thing I am curious about is, you know, in your role, you appoint many leaders on a system-wide level and also at an individual hospital level. And I'm just curious about what you do when you see a new leader falling prey to some of these mistakes that you talk about. How do you help them out of it? How do you coach them or guide them or just let them know that what they're doing is maybe a little dangerous and could lead down a bad road? What do you do with
that? Well, one of the things we have major leadership development and training programs here. In fact, this evening, I'm going for a graduation that is being held for many of our physician, up-and-coming physician leaders that have gone through a two-year training program. So we try to do this in a lot of the upfront training and education, the values and those behaviors that are accepted. Now, if I have somebody in an organization that is going off the reservation, and not that they don't, not that they're, you know, I want people to question, I want people to disagree, but if somebody's off the reservation in terms of lowering the bar on civility, demonizing other people, you have a discussion with them. We make it clear that that is not acceptable. If it continues, that person does not work in this organization anymore. And we have actually made lots of changes over the years in people that are like this. You've got to clean house ever so often when you have that kind of behavior. It's like, for example, an analogy that some people may not like, but if you have a garden in your apartment or in your house, weeds grow in it. Ever so often, you got to weed the garden. If you don't, the weeds take over. The good fruit that you're trying to, or the good whatever you're trying to grow, the weeds take over. So you gotta weed the garden. It's the same in any organization. As I tell people here, if you're a jackass, you don't work in our organization.
Well, I think that's a pretty straightforward way to encapsulate all these points.
Yeah, that's a clinical term, by the way.
Gotcha. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. For more podcast interviews, visit beckershospitalreview.com and click on the multimedia tab. For podcast inquiries, email dfreeman@beckershealthcare.com. Until next time, this is Leo Bartarella.